Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Remembrance of Lord Krishna, text number 24. Manyesharan Bhagavatam Chaya Dishe. Sambramba bharaga binivishta chittan Ye samyuge chakshita taksha putram Hamse shuna bayudham apatandham Prabhupada was always very happy to get the devotees to chant these verses, because as we see in this purport here, that any contact we have with Krishna, we achieve the same result. The devotees become greatly benefited, whatever contact we have with Krishna. And of course, all these verses in the Bhagavatam, they're not different from Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. Manye, I think, Asuran, the demons. Bhagavatam, great devotees, Sri Adishe, unto the Lord of the Threes. Samrambha, enmity, Magha, by the whale, Abhinivishta Chitan, absorbed in thought, yea, those, Samyuke, in the fight, Achakshata, could see, Taksha Putram, Garuda, the carrier of the Lord. Amshe, on the shoulder. Shunaba, the wheel. Ayudham, one who carries the weapon. Apatantam, coming forward. Translation. I consider the demons who are inimical to the Lord to be more than the devotees, because while fighting with the Lord, absorbed in thoughts of enmity, they are able to see the Lord carried on the shoulder of Garuda, the son of Taksha, Kashyapa, and carrying the wheel weapon in his hand. Translation responsibly. I consider the demons who are inimical toward the Lord to be more than the devotees, because while fighting with the Lord, absorbed in thoughts of enmity, they are able to see the Lord carried on the shoulder of Garuda, the son of Taksha, Kashyapa, and carrying the wheel weapon in his hand. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Asuras who fought against the Lord face to face got salvation due to their being killed by the Lord. This salvation of the demons is not due to their being devotees of the Lord. It is because of the Lord's causeless mercy. Anyone who is slightly in touch with the Lord, somehow or other, is greatly benefited, even to the point of salvation, due to the excellence of the Lord. He is so kind that he awards salvation even to his enemies, because they come into contact with him and are indirectly absorbed in him by their inimical thoughts. Actually, the demons can never be equal to the pure devotees, But Uddhava was thinking in that way because of his feelings of separation. He was thinking that at the last stage of his life he might not be able to see the Lord face to face as did the demons. The fact is that the devotees who are always engaged in the devotional service of the Lord in transcendental love are rewarded many hundreds and thousands of times more than the demons by being elevated to the spiritual planets, where they remain with the Lord in eternal blissful existence. The demons and impersonalists are awarded the facility of merging in the Brahma Jyoti effulgence of the Lord, whereas the devotees are admitted into the spiritual planets. For comparison, one can just imagine the difference between floating in space and residing in one of the planets in the sky. The pleasure of the living entities on the planets is greater than that of those who have no body and who merged with the molecules of the sun's rays. The impersonalists, therefore, are no more favoured than the enemies of the Lord, rather they are both on the same level of spiritual salvation. Let us read the verse again. Manye saran bhagavatam chaya dishe samaramba bhagavinavishta chittan ye samyuge chikshita tarksha putram amshe shana bhayudam abhatantam. I consider the demons who are inimical toward the Lord to be more than the devotees, because while fighting with the Lord, absorbed in thoughts of enmity, they are able to see the Lord carried on the shoulder of Garuda, the son of Taksha, Kashyapa, and carrying the wheel weapon in his hand. So, what do you notice about this particular verse here? What stands out about this particular verse? Yes. Whether you're a devotee or a demon, one still becomes liberated if they're somehow come into contact with the Supreme Lord. But there's something else even more. Yes, the demons, whatever he's saying, that that's a standout feature here, he says, I consider the demons who are inimical toward the Lord to be more than the devotees. Yes, so there's a confusion. Huh? It appears to be a difference. Yesterday he said something. Today he's saying something different. It appears like that. So therefore, do we take it that instead of trying to be pious and sinless, if we want to get the attention of Krishna, we should start breaking the regular principles, becoming rascals and disregarding the scriptures? Well, it appears it's there in the Bhagavad. Therefore, we can see that understanding the scripture, it takes more than just good intelligence, to be able to translate the Sanskrit and to just, you know, read what is there and just understand what's in the verses. It takes more than just that material intelligence. Actually, you know, to understand this section of the Bhagavatam properly, especially it becomes apparent in this verse, if there's no sense of love and devotion, you know, then it's not really possible to understand, you know, the meaning these verses of the Bhagavatam. Just like you see that on a practical level, what I've seen with, you know, when I talk to various young women who, when they begin university, that one of the things that, you know, many women who were previously anti-abortion, they go to university, all of a sudden they become pro-abortion. And it seems like the intelligent thing to do. You know, they get in amongst the intellectuals, and, you know, it's always surprised me. They can just go from, you know, young girls who could never consider causing any harm to a little baby within the womb, all of a sudden they become intellectuals, and it becomes the, you know, most intelligent thing to do. And so they have these various arguments that, you know, they give these examples that, you know, what if there was, you know, a child, and you know, was born by some accident, you know, by the parents didn't really want it, and you know, the child was going to be born up into, you know, extreme poverty, and in a, you know, circumstances where the parents were going to, you know, be taking all sorts of, you know, intoxications, and you know, living in a horrible, violent environment. You know, isn't it better to, you know, not let that child live, and you know, have the abortion. So, and of course, you know, my simple answer to that is, you know, if that's the case, if the parents think like that, why don't they just let the child take birth and then foster it out into a nice family where the child can, you know, live a good life. You know, that's a problem. You know, why is it a solution? So ultimately we see that there's one example that I've heard that someone gave an example like that. And they said, you know, if a child was going to be born, and there's like, you know, there's another dozen children and they've got barely any money, they practically, you know, can't survive, the children are starving, would you abort that child? And people say, yes. You say, well, you've just aborted Beethoven. Because, you know, they're his circumstances. You know? And, or, you know, if you look at some of the circumstances of, actually, they just, in South Australia, they've just made someone the governor, governor general or something. So he's a representative, you know, of the the Queen in one sense. And he was born, I think, in Vietnam, and he came over as a very, very young child, fleeing. You know, a place where there is, you know, extreme violence, poverty, you know, such harsh conditions that, you know, they have to risk travelling across the ocean in a tiny little boat. So he arrived here, just a little child without any real, you know, he had, you know, nothing in the land that he came from. And now he's, you know, the governor of, just been appointed the governor. But of course, if one saw his circumstances, you know, in Vietnam, one can never imagine, you know, what he's going, oh, look, you know, this child, you know, he's going to be born in such a horrible situation, you know. So but what we see is that actually the real, the intelligence is usually blinded by the fact that, especially when, you know, the young women start going to universities, there's a lot of, you know, association with boys and what have you, and they've got their plans to, you know, have, you know, a big career. You know, they're going to be a doctor or a lawyer or, you know, something like this. They're going to have to study for so many years. They're going to have to try and get a house and get married and what have you. And, of course, if a baby comes along in the middle of that, it's really just going to spoil the whole scenario from their perspective, you know. So they have all these, you know, very intellectual reasons. They can give so many different logical reasons. But actually, it comes down to the fact that there's no real, you know, love and affection, because we were reading in the Bhagavatam, when one becomes attached to sense gratification, one's heart becomes hard like a stone. And I quoted that the famous song by Santana, probably, I don't even know, but got a black magic woman. And it says, what's the verse that, you know, I need you so badly, you know, you've turned my heart into stone. So, you know, that, and we were reading the fourth canto, the same thing, you know, there was, what is his name? The son of Priyavrata, is it? Son of, what's that? That's him, yeah. And he was also saying he was just so attracted to his wife that it, you know, his heart felt like stone. So, you know, when there's this, you know, one becomes very, very much, you know, attracted to sense gratification, one's heart becomes very hard. Even, you know, this desire for liberation is actually a sign of hard-heartedness. It means that, you know, one is not capable of loving God, one is not capable of loving other living entities, and to practice that process, you know, one performs very severe austerities and what have you. And Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar Devotion that, you know, too much austerity, which is sort of like, you know, and you know, renunciation that are not required, they make the heart hard, because it's the opposite side of sense gratification. They actually both have the same effect. So even though, you know, there are certain things that just can't be understood unless there's some, unless the heart is soft and capable of, you know, you know, feeling and expressing, you know, very fine. And of course, pure sentiments related to love, which is natural for the living entity. And of course, Srila Prabhupada says that, you know, he indicates anyway that you know, this, the love for a mother, for her children, you know, it's one of the closest things we get in the material world to pure love, because there's that sense of a mother puts aside her own personal benefits and is just acting for the benefit of the child. So that's what love is. When we're actually, we want to see the other person happy. So therefore, you know, it resembles that. But so here also, you know, Uddhava is speaking something that you know, he's considering the demons who are inimical toward the Lord to be more than the devotees. Now, unless we understand Uddhava's loving sentiments with Krishna, then really an intellectual understanding will not allow us to properly understand what Uddhava is expressing. It will be taken out of context. It will be taken out of context with other verses, as you said, previous verse, you know, we're saying something different. How dear the Lord is to his devotees. It's taken out of context with the whole Bhagavatam. It's taken out of context with the Bhagavad Gita. It's taken out of context with the you know, the entire Vedic scriptures. Because actually, all the Vedic scriptures are based upon three levels of realization: sambandha, understanding our eternal relationship, our eternal loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, acting upon that, and coming to the platform of ultimate perfection of pure love of God, where one becomes qualified to go back to the spiritual world. So all the Vedic literatures are based upon these, that you know, to understand that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that we are a spiritual atom. We're a jiva. In the conditioned soul, we're a jiva bhuta, or a conditioned, a spirit soul that's come into the material world that's conditioned by the material energy. But on the liberated platform, we're Brahma Bhuta, or we're a spirit soul who is liberated from the material energy. But we are a little particle of the Supreme Lord's spiritual energy, Vibhansa. Because part of Sambandha is understanding that the scriptures, all the Vedic literatures, and as described also in the Bhagavad Gita, teach us that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of whom Krishna is the origin, he expands himself as Svamsa and Vibhansa. Svamsa means he expands in his Vishnu Tattva features, and so he expands as different forms, and they are non-different from God. They are on the platform of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He also expands that his spiritual energy expands as Vibhansa, or little spirit souls, individual spirit souls, which are part of the Lord's spiritual energy. So the Supreme Lord, as Svamsa, he is always the energetic, the source of all energies, the master of all energies, and as Vibhansa, the spirit soul is a little particle of one of the energies of the Lord, which is Prakriti, meant to be enjoyed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is Sambandha. So therefore, our eternal relationship, according to all the Vedic literatures, being part and parcel of the Supreme Whole, is to actually serve the Supreme Whole. To serve the Supreme Lord. And the example is given that, Srila Prabhupada gives the example that, you know, if a little screw, sometimes you see one lying on the floor, and, you know, without being attached to a machine, basically it has no real value. So, you know, people might see a little screw there and throw the bin, has no value. But that same little screw, when it's attached to the machine, it has value as a part serving the whole. It is not the whole machine, but it is a part that serves a function within the whole machine, a small function. So our position is like that. We are part of the whole, and therefore we serve the supreme whole, just like the little finger, another example Prabhupada gives. You know, very, very simple examples, but they really show our eternal position. You know, the hand, of course, is meant to serve the body. So, you know, we dictate to the hand, you know, you can little itch there. So the hand comes and, you know, serves the body. And, you know, if there's some prasadam, the hand will take the prasadam and put to the mouth, and it nourishes the whole body. But if the hand were to take that prasadam and just say, well, you know, I'm going to act independently from the body, I'm no longer feeding, you know, the body, I'm just going to keep the, you know, to myself, then the hand becomes useless and literally cannot actually properly function or feel satisfaction or nourishment like that. So all the scriptures show us that we're actually meant to serve the Supreme Lord. That is our, that is Sanatan Dharma. The Lord is eternal. We are an eternal part and parcel of the Lord. Our relationship with Him is eternal. And the service that we render to Him is eternal. That is called Sanatan Dharma. And the abode that we serve the Lord in, that is also eternal, that is in the spiritual world. So that is actually the true religious principles which are shown in the Bhagavatam and which are also there within all the Vedic literatures. And all the scriptures, whether you take the Bible, the Quran, you know, or the, you know, all the other various scriptures, the Hindu scriptures, they're all teaching us, you know, the Varnashram system. They're all teaching us how to always be a servant of the Supreme Lord and never disobey the Supreme Lord by becoming sinful. So, you know, that is a principle of all the religious scriptures. So, and then one should act upon that understanding of the Supreme Lord. One should act upon that understanding, and that is called Abhideya, so Sambandha, understanding our eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, and then acting upon that, Abhideya, and that acting upon that can begin from where we are very, very conditioned by the modes of material nature, and therefore we may follow the various rules of you know, the Varnashram system, gradually coming to the point where a person becomes liberated from the material conditions. So the scriptures give us ways of serving the Supreme Lord, avoiding sinful activity or you know, acting for the jagya, acting for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. If one is you know, very conditioned by the modes of ignorance, then that person has to learn their connection, the ability to serve the Supreme Lord, you know, on the platform of sutra. But it is the same principle. So there's a lot more concessions because they're attached to a certain material facility. And gradually, as a person becomes less and less attached to and conditioned by the material energy, that person may become a brahmana. And a brahmana, they come to the position where they realize that they are a spirit soul, brahman, aham brahmasmi. And therefore, because they have that realization, you know, they're much less attached to the, they need much less facility for material sense gratification. And therefore, they're expected to perform, you know, to fully control the mind and the senses. So, in fact, the as Srila Prabhupada mentions, the Varnashram system is actually scientifically divided according to one's spiritual advancement. So, one who is, you know, deeply conditioned by the material energy, where their spiritual advancement is very, very much covered, then, you know, they take the role of sudras. Gradually, as one you know, gets an understanding of one that I am a spirit soul, that they begin to identify as a spirit soul, they gradually, you know, then that is the Brahmana. So the actual Varnashram system is divided upon one's spiritual advancement or lack of it. And then, as described here, sometimes those who become understand that they are a spirit soul and they understand there is the Supreme Lord and they want to attain liberation. Or sometimes, you know, they understand they're a spirit soul but they don't understand that the Supreme Lord exists. And they also want to attain liberation. Here, Prabhupada mentions in his purport that the impersonalists, so impersonalists means they have no real concept, developed concept, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a person, a spiritual person. So those impersonalists, they're no more favoured than the enemies of the Lord. Rather, they are both on the same level of spiritual salvation. The enemies of the Lord, we see here that the Asuras who fought against the Lord, face to face, they got salvation due to being killed by the Lord. So, Prabhupada mentions, this salvation of the demons is not due to their being devotees of the Lord. So it's not a great qualification of theirs that they got salvation. They got salvation because it's the causeless mercy of the Lord. So, as I think you pointed out, that you pointed out, but one of the features that we do understand from this translation is that from one perspective, those demons who are filled with anger or, you know, envy of the Supreme Lord, they attain, by the causeless mercy of the Lord, the same destination as the impersonalists. But the devotees of the Lord, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, they do not attain an impersonal abode, but they actually attain Krishna. They attain the same nature as Krishna, as he describes. They attain Krishna's abode. And this is also described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, we cannot, you know, all the Vedic literatures are teaching us that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead. We should try to serve him and ultimately go beyond the point of liberation where one develops their love for God. Because if we don't develop that love for God, we can attain liberation, but you cannot attain the spiritual planets. That is reserved for the devotees of the Lord. And therefore, Prabhupada mentions here, for comparison, one can just imagine the difference between floating in space and residing in one of the planets in the sky. So, you know, if someone said, you know, they've developed, you know, that's that very famous, there's that very famous man who's developing planes that go out into space and cost you $250,000. And I think he owns Virgin Airlines or something. What's his name? Richard Branson, yeah. So he says, yes, we've, you know, we can offer you two flights. One, we can fly you up to space and just leave you floating there in a, you know, a space suit forever. Or, you know, we've colonized the moon and you can go there and be with other people and do some things. What would you choose? You know, but you imagine just floating out in space, just by yourself. There's no one to talk to, nothing to do. You know, it'd be unacceptable. You know, an intelligent person would understand. That's, you know, please don't drop me off, you know, on the way to the moon. Don't drop me off out in space. So the devotees of the Lord, they are definitely in a better they're actually more favored. Prabhupada says here, it says, actually the demons can never be equal to the pure devotees, but Uddhava was thinking in that way because of his feelings of separation. He was thinking that at the last stage of his life, he may not be able to see the Lord face to face as the demons, as did the demons. Why was Uddhava thinking that? Why? Krishna had departed. Because Krishna had already departed, and therefore he was thinking, at the last stage of my life, I'm not going to be able to see Krishna face to face. And yet the demons, who were killed by, you know, as he describes in Acts, appears like Lord Vishnu riding on Garuda, they saw the Lord face to face. I'm not going to get that opportunity. It appears that they're, you know, better situated than I am. That's his feelings of separation. He's saying that because he wants to see the Lord. He wants to, you know, be in the association of the Supreme Lord, and he wants to serve the Supreme Lord. And he's thinking that even the thought of separation is disturbing. Just like Rukmini. There's different types of separation. You can actually have separation even in the presence of the Lord. You know, so like Rukmini, when Krishna was joking with her, I think you've chosen the wrong husband. And she just fell, you know, flat like a banana tree in a hurricane. She was just devastated. Just the thought that I may be separated. She wasn't separated. Krishna was just joking with her. But just the thought of it, there's no question Krishna would leave her, but that feeling of separation, it just overwhelmed her. It's just something that they can't even, keep that thought in their heart, not for a moment. It's just too disturbing. So here, like with Uddhava, you know, it's just that thought that, you know, what if I don't see Krishna? It just, you know, and so he's speaking like that in this mood of separation, and therefore we can understand this verse by Uddhava by understanding his love for Krishna. But if one does not understand the mellows of bhakti, which are based upon pure love, it's not possible for one to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it would be like, as Prabhupada says, that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati the course says, it's like licking the outer jar of the honey. You know, you cannot taste it at that. Only by hearing from the devotee. So, you know, we're very fortunate that we hear these purports, and Srila Prabhupada explains everything very, very nicely. So when he explains it, then it's like he is opening up the jar for us and allowing us to get a little taste of the Bhagavatam. You know, that is, and Srila Prabhupada has taken the commentaries of all the great Vaishnavas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, and because they're so kind, they have allowed, if we hear from the devotees and Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, then the lid is open and you can actually taste. But if we just try to have an intellectual understanding of the Srimad Bhagavatam, without bhakti and without hearing from a bhakta, then it's not possible to actually understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, it's not possible to understand the Bhagavad Gita, which is even the preparatory understanding for understanding the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. His question is that we see that Srila Prabhupada, he performed a lot of austerities and difficulties, you know, for starting the Krishna consciousness and you know, expanding the Krishna consciousness movement. So we were saying before that austerities, as Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar Devotion, that unnecessary austerities, too much that are not required, they can make the heart hard at that. So Srila Prabhupada's austerities and the difficulties that he performed were all performed out of love for Krishna, that he understood from his spiritual master that Krishna is teaching in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is teaching that in this world no one can be happy without Krishna consciousness, because there's birth, death, old age and disease. And Krishna says over and over again, if you don't follow my path, you'll be ruined, you'll be befooled, you know, all your endeavours will come to ruination. Krishna says that. Krishna says, you know, very clearly, if you want happiness and eternal happiness, you really have to become Krishna conscious. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, he came and he wanted that teachings of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam distributed all over the world so that people could become happy by Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada, out of love for Krishna, because when you love someone, you want to serve them, you want to make them happy. So in order to fulfill Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire, Krishna's desire, the Krishna's devotee's desire, Srila Prabhupada performed all sorts of difficulties because he wanted to serve them out of love. That Srila Prabhupada's service, you see, was done in complete surrender. You can't completely surrender to someone if there's no love. You know, you can't completely surrender to Guru, you can't completely surrender to Krishna. you know, the whole process of surrender is a concomitant process of developing bhakti. Bhakti is loving devotion. As we develop bhakti, concomitantly the surrender increases with the level of our bhakti or the level of our love for Krishna. So all of the activities of Srila Prabhupada were performed out of love, devotion and surrender to Krishna. And therefore, because they're performed out of love, there's no question of the heart becoming hard. See? Because the very motivation for every one of Srila Prabhupada's activities is love of God, love of the Vaishnavas, and compassion for all living entities. So there's no question that if one performs austerities, even very severe austerities there, that one's heart will become hard, because the very motivation is pure love. It's where we're performing activities which are not based upon bhakti, and we may be performing some, very severe austerities that, may not necessarily be favourable. In fact, they're not particularly favourable for developing bhakti. That's where we have to be careful. You may just end up with a hard heart, but you won't necessarily end up with bhakti or love of God. Mm.
Thank you for the wonderful class, brief insights. Here in the report, Prabhupada says, where is it? Anyone who is likely in touch with the Lord somehow or the other is greatly benefited, even to the point of salvation due to the excellence of the Lord. He's so kind that he awards salvation even to his enemies because they come in contact with him and are indirectly absorbed in him by their inimical thoughts. Now, in context of the problem of terrorism, which is all around the world right now, mm-hmm. that people blowing themselves up, killing people, in the thought of God, they're doing, according to them, they're doing the work of God, mm-hmm. they're making a sacrifice for the sake of God. So what is their situation?
Well, I think it's recognized even from those who don't have a lot of knowledge about religion that there's not a lot of real religious motivation in the wars that are really going on now. You know, I think that's whether you're religious or irreligious, I think most people know. You know, they're fighting over oil and land and what have you. You know, so that's it's not related to religion. I'll just take a question from any of the ladies because we really have to finish up here. Any of the ladies have a comment or question? No. Oh, or just like, you know, Kamsa was killed by Vishnu in his previous lifetime. In his previous lifetime, Kamsa was Kalanemi. And he was killed by Lord Vishnu, who, you know, rides on Garuda. And, you know, so there are many incidences like that. they may not necessarily attain liberation immediately. Sometimes they become very wealthy. We see that even with Hiranyakasipu, and you know, in one life they become, you know, they become very powerful and wealthy and what have you, and gradually they attain liberation and they come back to the position of love of God. It depends upon their exact mentality. Sanatana Goswami analyzes that very carefully in his Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita. That what the slightest little favorable thought of Krishna, in other words, if you recognize that he is God, is different to you. You're envious of him and you don't even recognize he's God. If you're killed in that mentality, you get a different destination. That whatever slight little favorable thought, like some even appreciated that he was God, and some even, you know, acknowledge some of his good qualities and what have you. But so for every little favorable thought towards God, Sanatana Goswami shows how each and every one of the demons got a specific result after death. So the point of the purport here is that if we are trying to love God, you can be assured of your that your future is very rosy. That's the main point that we, you know, if the demons, you know, just for the, you know, somehow or another, they hate God. They want to kill him. They want to destroy religious principles. They want to destroy the devotees and so many things. And Krishna, somewhere in there, Prabhupada says, Krishna always takes the bright side. He finds, oh, there's a little something good there. And he rewards them unlimitedly. That's what Prabhupada says. He always takes the bright side, and of course we saw that in yesterday's verse. So if we're serving Krishna, you can guarantee that, you know, Krishna is Baba Graha Janardana. He sees the intention. Even if you serve Krishna and you don't do it very well, it doesn't matter. If you're trying to serve Krishna to please him, Krishna takes that part. He doesn't take the where you're materially deficient or what have you. He takes that love and devotion and he gives unlimited results to it. That's the main purpose of this. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The word transition in the verse.
Yeah. So which one was it?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Unto the Lord of Threes. I think that was described previously in previous verses. But in essence, because he's the Lord of Threes, and the many different Threes, means that although he's the Lord of everything, let's take it like that. He's the Lord of absolutely everything. But despite the fact that he is the almighty, powerful Lord of everything, which generally there are divisions of three, you know, he is so kind. You know, he's very powerful. You know, he's so powerful he could just squash you like someone steps on an ant. He's so unlimited that he doesn't even have to notice anything we do. You know, he's the Lord of everything. You know, as much as you can imagine, they're generally grouped into, you know, divisions of three. So unlimited, so powerful. But he takes notice that somewhere in this tiny little speck of a universe, we're doing some little service with so many faults, and he is seeing the bright side. And I will reward this devotee. He's watching. He's watching each and every one of us. That's what we take. Yes.
Well,
yes.
So that it's not like everybody
gets
the same destination.
That's right. Yeah. And that's exactly right. He, you know, he notices even the most subtle difference in surrender. You know, right down to the, you know, just this person has, or you know, this demon was like this, but there's the slightest subtle, more favorable thought there. He'll reward that. This devotee is doing this, but there's just a little extra devotion, surrender there. He'll reward that. Nothing goes unchecked by Krishna. He also gave him his association and he can, that's right. Lord Nityananda, sometimes when people approached the Lord but they were very insincere, sometimes he would award them material benediction so they would go away. That's yeah, Guru Kishore Das Babaji, you know, he mentions that, you know, so, and he gave some examples of people like that. So yes, the Lord, you know, if they're going to cause too much trouble, but yes, everything, he's very, very expert. Yeah. Hare Krishna.